In meditation, when we're trying to calm the mind, still the mind, I think it's a common tendency to try to sort of eliminate the thinking. I'm trying to get rid of the thinking mind. There's a common sort of equation that comes up. Sort of, I think, therefore I suffer. So if I didn't think, then I wouldn't suffer. So then we say, well, okay, Buddhism is for the overcoming of suffering, so I must annihilate thinking. So usually what happens then is one either is the thinking explodes, or one ties oneself in knots trying not to think, sort of, and you might be actually quite successful in kind of pushing down thought and suppressing it, but it never feels very good. So that the I think the skillful use of directed thought, so like directing thought to loving kindness is a skillful way of using thought. Applying thought in a way that allows the mind to build a momentum of that kind of skillfulness, wholesomeness, that the thoughts are increasingly more and more on the side of that which is kusala, the wholesome. And in its very nature of the kusala citta, the mind of wholesomeness, then it's peaceful, it's settled, it has a steady quality to it. Another useful way of directing thought is, say, directing thought to the aspects of what in Pali are called sangveka, a cult of urgency, a sense of there's no time to waste. There's no time to fool around. One of the reflections that the monastics are encouraged to cultivate on a regular basis the days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time? That's a very useful reflection, because that just that reality of the days and nights relentlessly passing, and they don't pass benignly. I mean, it's each day that passes we're older, and just that much closer to death. That's the reality. Managed to make it through another day, and and we still have death as a reality, and that we are going to have to face. So that's the sense of urgency, because the letting time slip by in a way that is frivolous, empty, or just propping up old habit patterns. Recycling our trusty companions of greed, hatred, and delusion. they're saying, "Wow, you know, where does that get us?" And so it's a sense of urgency. You know, we've done it. We've all done it. We've all seen. Now say that's. It's not so fruitful, that motivation for urgency. There, as we bring up those say motivations for urgency, it's aging, sickness, death. The impermanence and uncertainty of the mind and its moods, it's a skillful antidote to complacency. It's not something to flog oneself with and turn it into sort of a neurotic obsession, but it's something that is essential in terms of, yeah, we need to prod ourselves and not to waste time, waste opportunities. So this sense of the skillful directing of thought, so that there's a sense of urgency arising, and a sense of, and urgency is not sort of a frantic quality in the mind. A sense of urgency is a sense of motivation. Okay, yeah, I want to get up and get moving. Get up and have the opportunity to use the time skillfully, develop virtue. Train in that which is really peaceful, and establish myself in wisdom and discernment. These are sort of the motivations. And again, not to turn it into something that has a frantic or a manic edge to it, which isn't really useful. But it is helpful to have that sense of urgency. Sangveka is a very positive mental state and motivation. As we use that directed thought, then then it's helpful to in meditation or in ordinary circumstance, to be able to review those five hindrances that we went over yesterday, these particular tendencies of the mind are really the kind of the fundamental aspects that in terms of patterns, they're patterns that bring us to a place of say non-peacefulness, and lack of clarity, so that those five hindrances to really be reviewing that, okay, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, worry, and doubt, and seeing, are they there, how to work with them, how they arise. You know, when in terms of directed thought, say, what is the mind directing thought? If there is, say, sensual desire, what are we directing thought towards? You know, we're usually directing thought towards something that we perceive as pleasurable, delightful, capable of gratification, so that there's that directed thought is then grabbed by the hindrances and the defilements and ends up agitating the mind. That directed thought, when it's directed towards ill will, aversion, irritation, anger, displeasure, then it sort of, as we direct thought towards that, then of course it brings up, it feeds the hindrance, so that that feeding of the hindrance and gets healthy and strong. And you don't want healthy and strong hindrances. You'd be much better off starving them. Just don't feed them. I remember Ajahn Chah saying one time, I said, what's the hindrances? Or is this just like you got a cat that comes around? You know, sort of meow, 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 meow. And you say, oh, this poor cat, you feed it. Sure enough, it's back again. It's out on the porch every morning. Meow, 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 meow. You know, and that, so you feed the hindrances. That's why Vayagiri, where people wonder, why don't we have dogs and cats? If you feed them, they just keep coming around. They usually tell their friends as well. You end up, then you, if that's what one's doing with one's hindrances, so you feed one of them, you end up with multiple hindrance attacks. Paying attention to just, okay, if I don't feed it, if I just don't direct thought in that way towards the stimulus for the hindrance, then it fades, and then one can, you know, that opens up a space for then one to positively direct attention, so that they say, especially for ill will, or then that positive directing of thought towards loving kindness, towards metta, that's a very skillful application of that directed thought. Sloth and torpor is when we direct thought towards sort of the fullness after the meal, sort of certain lassitude that we feel, or sense of disinterest that we have in something, and that feeds sloth and torpor. So that, just as a training, just not letting the mind rest on the things that are that would tend to sloth and torpor, to dullness. Because if we say we pay attention to it, then the mind absorbs into it. surface, so that then that lassitude or dullness starts to take over. So it's like withdrawing attention and directed thought to those areas of the mind and experience that are say they're obscure or they're kind of dull and amorphous, and then because especially in meditation, different mental states sort of drift in and drift out of the mind, and if you sort of just let the mind dwell on the more obscure, amorphous, drifty states of mind, then that's where one ends up in just the mind, very very dull. So it's important to direct attention to sort of to feed the ability of the mind to focus and center on something that is brightening, sharpening, bringing clarity to the mind. And the same with restlessness, same with doubt. I mean, this is how we direct our attention, direct our direct thought. So these five hindrances are a very useful area of reflection in terms of how to establish attention, how to bring up that attention, because when we do direct attention in a way that is not dissipated through the distraction of those five hindrances, then the mind becomes very steady, strong. There's a kind of a strength there. The Buddha compares it to a mountain stream that comes down. And if that stream comes down from the mountain and then it's channeled off into different little canals and rivulets, then the power of that stream is dissipated. Right? It's not able, doesn't have the power to wash away anything or to have a strength. Whereas, and that's compared to the mind, that is the energy of the mind, the flow of the mind, is dissipated out into the five hindrances. And when it goes off into these different hindrances, then that the strength of that current of stream is just not so strong. And of course, the opposite is true when a stream comes down and it's not dissipated, and it has tremendous power. Of course, then it can be used for something beneficial, like at Abhayagiri, we're trying to set up a micro hydro system. And if the stream goes off in all sorts of different directions, you get this piddly little turbine, just clunk, kerchunk, kerchunk, and you get no power, you get no electricity. Whereas if you can get that stream, that channel going into one place, one direction, you can generate a lot of electricity, and you don't have to pay PG&E. So these are, and it's sort of natural, or these are attributes of nature, and it's just the mind. This is not something so strange, but it's important to Be attentive and recognize how these patterns and tendencies work, and then what happens when we direct thought in a particular way, toward the hindrances. Well, what's the result of that? And then what's the result when we're able to ameliorate and set aside those five hindrances, and then to allow the attention to really settle and focus. As the those five hindrances are then more in abeyance, particularly, say, the theme of this retreat is the metta, so that bringing attention to that metta, the metta nimitta, or the metta, the object of loving kindness, the object in the mind of loving kindness, and allowing that to start to shine forth, and that sense of directing thought in a way that supports the feeling of loving kindness, the feeling of well wishing, the feeling of warmth, of kindness, sense of a softness within the heart, sense of brightness that's there, that is holds oneself dear, and one holds others with a sense of dearness. So that allowing that, directing that thought to the feeling of loving kindness. Again, the thoughts are there to help remind, but underlying that is the particular feeling, spaciousness in the mind, spaciousness in the heart, warmth, and allowing that to establish through the body, toward oneself, and using that directed thought, and as the mind is able to keep guarding that sustained application of those thoughts of loving kindness, or that feeling of loving kindness. Sometimes the English language is clunky, because the word in Pali, the word that's used is vitakka. So vitakka and vichara. Vitakka is the thought, or what's translated as thought, or directed thought. But it's much more, it's both the thought as well as the, say, the bringing up into the mind. So that bringing up the perception, the thought, the feeling. That's all vitakka. So the arising of the thought of loving kindness, the directing of attention of loving kindness, whether it's on the level of the thought, feeling, perception, but that bringing it up into the mind is vitakka, directing attention to that. And vichara is the you know, the sustaining of that, the continuity of that, but it's, there's also an evaluation that goes on, in the sense that how am I holding it? How is it sustaining itself? What's it feel like? What's its texture? So there's a continuity. There's that initial bringing up into the mind of the attention, and then there's the sustaining of that, and there's an evaluation, but it's not sort of an intellectual evaluation. It's getting a feel for the texture of that thought and the feeling within the mind, so that it's sustained. One's able to look at it in a different way, and so that it's like vitakka, sort of bringing that up in. Bringing it up into view within the mind, in the same way I've just lifted up this the bell ringer, and then vichara is the sort of looking at it from different angles and sort of sort of sustaining its view, looking at it, and there's an interest there that's able to sustain it. Then and sort of you get distracted. Vitakka. Bring it up again. Okay, right. And so, vitakka. So that's what one's doing with the thoughts of loving kindness or the meditation object at any time. So that one is using that process of directed thought and evaluation, so that there's a gaining of momentum of that interest and the interest and attention towards that object. So with the object of loving kindness, then it's that feeling, and it's not going to be homogeneous. It's not going to be consistent, but that's how you use vitakka and vichara. Sort of one is seeing it in, and you're not trying to make it absolutely consistent, but it's that directed thought and evaluation that's recognizing those different textures, and then maintaining the basic theme of loving kindness. And of course, the same is true in terms of whatever meditation object one uses, the breath. And that's how one makes the breath interesting, not by just ramming down and focusing on this, I'm going to make this breath interesting. it's looking at it and seeing, lifting it up, viewing it from different angles, and then. Then the mind is able to settle a bit longer on it, stay steady with it, and then part of the evaluation is also the recognition that this is starting to feel good. My body's feeling more comfortable. Yeah, I'm feeling more settled. So that there's a recognition of how that. The effect that it's having, so that with the object of loving kindness as a meditation object, say one encourages oneself with some wekha, one is attentive to those five hindrances, and then that directed thought and evaluation using the object of loving kindness, one of the very powerful aspects of loving kindness is that it has. There's as the loving kindness gets stronger, then the tendency towards say, ill will, aversion, it drops. It can't land in the mind so easily. And there's a very strong positive force, which then helps to ameliorate the other hindrances, which are those are also say akusala. I mean, all they're saying they're unwholesome, unskillful. So that there's that just the, it's like a really good bridge towards a steadiness of mind, and as one is cultivating the in conjunction with mindfulness of breathing, awareness of the body, but that loving kindness allows the mind to make that bridge between where the hindrances are sort of still kind of kicking in a bit, but then that force of wholesome mental states, bright mental states, dependent on, relying on loving kindness, then allows the mind to move into a place where it is more exclusively wholesome and settled. And that sense of secluded from sensual pleasures, or sensual desires, secluded from unwholesome mental states, that's it's a very real shift where the mind can then settle into its object. So whether that object is the metta nimitta itself or the breath is sort of dependent on what one is comfortable with, but the metta provides a very, very stable bridge into that steadiness of mind, where the mind is able to unify. And that, because it's the unification of the mind is disrupted through those little rivulets of the mind going off into different directions. So that going off to sensual desire, going off to ill will, going off to sloth and torpor, going off to restlessness, going off to doubt, allowing the mind to really bridge that gap into something that is more interestingly positive, in the sense that it's quite natural within, as human beings, we're actually hardwired to prefer pleasure to pain. So that if we can see something that is, that's really pleasurable, then the mind can then unify into that, so that something as pleasurable as sort of the feeling of loving kindness is then able to bridge that just the habit pattern that goes to restlessness or doubt or drifting. So that vitakka, vichara, directed thought, evaluation, the is a sort of a pleasure, a well-being, joy, happiness that is there, and as one practices and works with that bringing up into the mind, sustaining thought, and you know, something pleasurable arises in the mind, sort of bright states of mind, sort of joy arising. Just one's not doing anything wrong. It's all right to feel that. Sometimes, either one gets excited and starts to analyze it, or it's we give oneself permission to enjoy meditation. We're kind of, as human beings, kind of haplessly bumbling into sort of these old patterns of you know, so, oh, here I am, back suffering again. Well, at least it's familiar. Secure at last. allow the mind to explore the sort of the regions of well-being and happiness that are there, and that's why I think that the confidence can be there, because it's not the pleasure arising from just trying to get something gratifying. In terms of just a sensual hit, but it's more like this is very deeply satisfying, deeply joyful, when it's based on something that is, there's a purity of intention, and there's a sort of an unalloyed quality of skillfulness is wholesome. That's like in the story of the Buddha. Or when he was still the sort of the Bodhisattva striving for awakening, and he'd been struggling with all of these ascetic practices, and he's get to the point where he's emaciated, and frustrated. Like, I've tried everything and nothing's working. And he had a memory of when he was a young child, of becoming very peaceful and settled, concentrated, when he was left on his own during some ceremony. He was about 9 years old or something then. And his mind went into stillness, and he had that memory. And said, "Why am I afraid of that happiness? That is sort of, it's untainted by sensuality, it's untainted by unskillful tendencies. Why am I afraid? That's the path." And that was a sort of realization. There's actually nothing wrong with that. It's something that is so that he said, "Oh, this is the path." So that was when the Buddha, and I said, "Well, I'm never going to be able to cultivate this in a when being in such an emaciated shape. Better have to start eating again. Start." And this is, and that's where that insight into the middle path. So that cultivation, relying on that directed thought, using the thought process, using the investigative process, using the ability to pay attention to allow the mind to say to channel its energies, not attend to the things that are actually disruptive to the mind, but then being able to sustain attention on those things that are really nurturing to the mind, really nurturing to the heart. So then that's how the mind is able to unify. It doesn't happen by chance, and it doesn't happen just by sitting long enough. You know, if you put in the hours long enough, then somehow you're going to get peaceful. And I remember one of the my early years as a monk, there was another monk there who was, he'd been ordained for several years, and he never appeared very peaceful to me. And then, as I got to know him, he realized that he actually had a from the time he first started meditating, he had a journal that he kept track of every sort of meditation session he'd ever had, and how many hours and minutes he had meditated. And it was sort of it's like, if I get this, if I build my account up enough, I'm going to somehow I'm going to get peaceful. I said, no. You have to actually be doing it in the right way. You have to actually be skillful, so that the learning those skills of directing attention, what do you feed, what do you starve, what do you pay attention to, what do you ignore, what do you encourage, what do you discourage? Well, I mean, that takes some discernment, reflection, and then recognizing that, you know, something intrinsically, there's effects of different mental states. Yeah, anger, ill will, restlessness. These intrinsically, they have an effect on the mind. They're agitating. The loving kindness, the quality of compassion, the recognition of respect for truth. I mean, these are all things that have a deeply settling feeling within the heart. So allowing the mind to attend to that, allowing the mind to sustain that attention, and then realizing that, oh, well, that the kind of how the mind can unify relying on that. So when we talk about concentration, because sometimes the, you know, again, the overtones of interpretation or meaning that come from particular words, just the word concentration tends to have a me concentrating, forcing my mind on something and holding it there. And that's what concentration is. But that doesn't really convey what we actually do. So something like a unification, where the mind can be, it can be directed thought, evaluation, joy, well-being. The mind can still be unified. It's in the sense that it's unified in this feeling of well-being, this feeling of peacefulness, this feeling of being very, very settled and steady. And it's all working together. It's come together in a place of steadiness. So these are some reflections this morning from meditation.